Hello and welcome to episode 521 of Fergo on the Freak. I'm that bloke from Rugby League Project, Andrew Ferguson. You can find me in a tin can and also on Twitter at AndrewRP. And joining me as always is the glorious League Freak, who you can also find on Twitter at League Freak, but not in this can. How you going, man?
I'm going very well, Andrew. I was allowed to stay where there's technology that works because my team won the Fergo on the Freak Cup on the weekend.
That's right. This is a punishment. I've had to resort to using technology from 13 years ago.
Yep.
And have to spend the rest of the week living in a can.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It'd be like living in St. Helens, but if you're in the distant future.
This is true.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where I'm at. I can't really apologise, people. It's Freaky's fault.
It's nothing to do with me.
Well, your team won, so that's why I'm like this.
Well, you know, we were due to win something special.
Oh, boy. Oh, it's... Look, the one thing I got right out of this whole prediction was I said it wasn't going to be an absolute flogging.
True. That's true. Yeah, they made the Panthers work for it, which was interesting. Penrith didn't come out the way I expected them to after the bye, but, you know, it's hard to complain when you get the 2 points. So, and I thought that the West Tigers played pretty well considering. Like, I think that's the thing. When a team's been bad for so long, you just want them to be able to be in the fight. And the West Tigers are in the fight, you know, and eventually the scorelines will change. It's the same thing for the Canterbury Bulldogs, you know. They just want to be in the fight, and now they are. So it's good to see with these teams that have been struggling for a while.
Yeah, and look, as I said all along, all I wanted to see this year was the Tigers' defence to have a bit of bloody starch about it.
Hmm.
And it really has been consistently good, the defence so far this year from the Tigers. And if they just need to stay on that track, improve it where they can. Yeah, the attack's not scoring many points, but it hasn't been for quite a while. That's not the issue here. There's no point scoring a ton of points if you're letting a ton in.
Yeah.
So it's good that they're finally getting that in order. And I hope it continues because everything that Benji's doing at the moment is all on the right track. It's all in the right direction. And points difference, I mean, they've lost 4 games out of 6. Points difference is only minus 31. So you're only really one big win against some garbage team like Gold Coast away from having a positive points difference. That's what having a good defence is all about.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, they'll get there. It's going to be a long process, but, yeah, it's at least the process has begun. It hadn't been underway for a number of years for the Tigers, so it's good to see. Speaking of processes, how about the Knights losing Callan Ponga for months now because of this foot issue that he's got? It's terrible for them. They looked really bad with him. Without him, I think they could very easily finish like second last. I can't imagine that anyone's going to finish below the Titans this year. But, man, I can't see anybody finishing below the Newcastle Knights that isn't called the Titans. Like, I think I pinged the Knights this last few weeks where I was like, I just don't rate them. And Pong is the only good thing they've got going for them. They've committed to a bunch of players there, like a bunch of other teams have, weirdly enough, where, you know, you commit too early to dudes that you're not real sure of. And, you know, even the coach, like they re-signed Adam O'Brien to a contract extension and they look terrible. Like they're in a bad place.
I was a bit uncertain about that extension, to be honest. I thought, has he really shown you enough to justify that?
Yeah.
Look, I put it this way. Is there much of a difference between him and Rick Stone?
No, not at all.
Dump Stone twice.
Yeah, they were. Although one of them was Wayne Bennett knifing him.
Yeah. And even at that stage, you're like, they were lucky that he came back after all of that.
Yeah, he shouldn't have.
That's the sort of, yeah, I don't know. It was a bit weird. But they're saying that Pong is going to miss 12 weeks.
Mm.
Shall I go through the list of games I'll play without him over these next 12 weeks?
Yeah, go.
See how many you reckon the Knights will win.
Okay, with Jackson Hastings being their number one playmaker. Let's see.
Okay, so this week they've got the Dolphins at Suncorp.
They won't beat them.
Warriors at Newcastle.
I doubt they will beat them.
Tigers at Tamworth.
Oh, man. Next.
Titans at Suncorp.
I would take everyone over the Titans at the moment.
And then they've got a bye.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got the Bulldogs in Newcastle.
The Bulldogs on current form would flog them.
Then it's Melbourne down here.
They'll flog them.
Penrith in Newcastle.
They'll flog them.
Then a bye, and then Parramatta in Newcastle.
If Parramatta's a better team than them.
Yeah.
Even though Canberra Canberra. Canberra will put the cleaners through them and then think that they're premiership favourites because of it.
Yep. And then Manly at Brookvale. Sorry, Manly at Brooksvale.
Brooksvale. Well, Manly should beat them too. That's not a good run, although it's good for them that they've got two byes in there.
Yes. And then when he comes back, he's going to be against the Broncos at Newcastle and then another bye. And then Penrith at Penrith. Oh, man.
That's rough.
And then I thought, well, they've got Tigers at Newcastle, Sharks at Cronulla, South at Stadium Australia, then the Titans and Dolphins both at Newcastle.
I mean, it's just their season. Like, he's the only attacking player in their side you've got to worry about, and now he's gone.
And he had been playing pretty well this year too.
Yeah, he had been, yeah.
Pretty damn well. I mean, he would have been pushing close to getting as many Dally M points as Nicho Hynes for half the games.
If that's even physically possible, like somehow Nicho Hynes manages to get like 7 Dally M points when there's only 6 available.
Well, he probably got 2 against the West Tigers last week and yeah, didn't even play him.
True. But it was weird watching Ponga like struggling to play before he did his foot. I don't think that if you've got a player that is that important to your side, don't have him dragging his ass around like that. I know it was tough for him to do, but you just don't want to do that to a player. And I've been told by all and sundry that it's not a cascading sort of injury where you've got a hip problem and then you're trying to compensate for that and then you end up doing your foot. But it just overall, it was a bad situation and it ended up being catastrophic for them, basically. So they're going
to... I was going to say, when you've got your star player going to a game, he's carrying an injury this early in the season, you don't risk it.
No.
Yeah, you know, if it means we're going to take 2 L's, but for him to come back and be perfectly fine, so be it.
Yeah.
We'll take him. But especially when the other side of the coin is 12 weeks without him and, you know, possibly 8, 10, 12 losses in that period, you know, it's a bit of a crazy thing to do.
The other thing is too, like, because he wasn't able to move that well, he was getting absolutely smashed the entire game before he left the field. So I just don't know what they were thinking. But congratulations, they've got Adam O'Brien for the next few years. And sometimes teams make the dumbest fucking decisions. And it's based upon, like, these tiny little snippets that they look at rather than the bigger picture. And I don't understand it. And Newcastle's been fantastic for making dumb as fuck decisions for so many years. So, you know, they're stuck with this now. They're going to have to deal with it.
We should probably try and trace it back to where we think the first in the current run of dumb fuck decisions was made.
Mm.
Where do you reckon that might have been? Was it the signing of Bennett?
Well, I think you got to trace it back to when they sold the club to Nathan Tinkler, and then you know, and they weren't the best run club before that. But I think that's probably ground zero for everything that we've seen since.
That's a good call. That.
You know, and Bennett stacked that side with an old team.
Well, and that's what he does, though. If he's brought in on a short contract, he will stack it with experience, and get straight up success. And then when he leaves, someone else's problem.
Yeah. But I mean, that,
when you sign someone up like that for a short term contract, that's what you get them for, is for, you want immediate success. If you want long term success and you want to clean out, well, you're going to get Nathan Brown.
No, you don't. You don't get Nathan Brown.
He's the diarrhea you need when you need to flush everything out. He just comes in, gives everything that runs, and there's just nothing left. Then he goes.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a real good point. That's a really good way to describe his coaching, his diary.
Yes. The good old days. He'll be back soon. Way Hasler's coaching at the moment. Nathan Brown will be back.
Yeah. One of our listeners sent an article to the podcast Twitter feed, and it was about Nathan Brown going to the Titans.
Oh, no way.
I'm serious. Let me find it. Going my slow as fuck tablet that I bought. $200. It's worth probably half as much. Let me find it.
Is it made out of rock?
Rock could probably. It was Sam that sent it. From Code NRL, right? So take it with Code NRL. If you want to know all the latest rugby league news, don't go to Code NRL. It's the diarrhea of journalism.
It's the Nathan Brown of journalism.
Yeah, it said winless this season, the Titans are looking to shore up its on-field future by bringing in former NRL coach Nathan Brown as the club's pathways coordinator. So everything that Nathan Brown touches turns to diarrhea. So he'll be well suited to the Titans.
Wow, that's something, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing. What if you were in charge? You're a professional, and whether you're on the club's board or you're the head of performance or whatever it is, what are you thinking when? If someone says to me, "You know who we should bring in, sort some stuff out, Nathan Brown," I just tell them to clean their desk out because they're fired. I don't want stupid suggestions like that. But somebody said, you know what? That's a great idea. Let's go with that. And it happens time and time again at certain clubs. It's really – it leaves you scratching your head.
Well, you got to look at it this way, okay? Who was the last coach the Titans hired that was – the sort of coach where you went, yeah, that's a good idea.
I can't answer that. The only coach I can think of that a Gold Coast team has ever had that was semi okay was Phil Economides.
Yeah.
But can you think of anyone else? Maybe Neil, was it Neil Henry they got for a little bit?
Neil Henry was there for a little bit.
And he was he was all right.
Yeah. I don't know who they've had since then. Who have the Titans had? Cartwright.
Yeah. Brennan.
Cartwright, Henry, Brennan, Justin Holbrook. There's Hasler. My God.
Just a real who's who of just shit coaches.
At what point? So here's a question.
Yeah.
Where's their peak in that list, and at what point has it started going down south hard? Is Cartwright the peak?
I think Cartwright is the peak, yeah. I think he is. Which is crazy to think about, really, isn't it?
They peaked at birth and then just went downhill from there. Let's have a look at the other coaches at the other Gold Coast club. So they started out with Bob McCarthy.
Oh, really? I didn't know who was their first coach. Was that the Giants when they were the Gold Coast Tweedheads Giants? Well,
yeah, he covered all of that. So he was there 88 to 90.
Okay.
Malcolm Clift took over in 91.
Don't know him.
Wally Lewis was there for 2 years, 92, 93.
Yep.
John Harvey, 94, 95. And Phil Economides, 96, 98.
Yeah. Phil Economides was the one that I think he was in charge when it was that team with Preston Campbell in it, from memory.
That's right.
And they
made the finals.
Yeah, they made the finals. Yeah, that's why I picked him out.
He was their most successful coach in their history.
Yeah.
What do you reckon his win percentage was?
Oh, I would say 38%.
28.6.
Fucking fuck. Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Bob McCarthy was second at 22.1. John Harvey, 20.5. Wally with 15.9 and Cliff with 8.7.
Wow. Holy crap. That's special. That's like university special.
Yeah, that's at the level where they should be getting ideas on coaches from the West Tigers.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Jason Taylor could be the next coach of the Titans.
Jason Taylor would be better than like 20%.
Well, he has managed better than 20% even at the Tigers, so that's something.
Look, Matthew Elliott would be one of the best coaches they've ever had, and that says a lot.
I was going to say careful. Careful, careful. But no, it's you'd think it would be the one area where, especially with the Gold Coast, they do have a lot of young talent that they've got all around them there on the Gold Coast, in Brisbane and everywhere like that. You'd think the one thing they'd want is someone who understands player management. So, you know, you don't have to be a genius when it comes to plays. You can get assistant coaches to help run all that stuff. But you'd expect them to have a coach who knew how to harness all the local talent that's there and build a good squad out of it. Because it's the oldest rugby league area outside of Sydney in the game's history. And they've had those pathways there the whole time. So it's got me absolutely baffled that they don't know how to capitalize on all of that.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. Like, they should be a really good destination for players that are off contract. The rugby league talent is there. It's not even like you look at their lineup at the moment and see a lineup that's bereft of talent. Like, they've got talent there.
Oh, yeah, the pack is great.
Yeah, Big Tino might be the best forward in the world. Unfortunately, he's injured this year, but none of them take it seriously. And I'm not talking about Big Tino. He always does. Even in the losses, he's one of the best players on the field. But the rest of the entire organization, it's like they're a bunch of part-timers, that they're all there for a holiday or something. And it's hard to take anything out of the club seriously because of it.
Yeah, no, it really is. And that's just the way Gold Coast teams have been treated by players too often in the past. And it still goes on now.
Yeah. It's not even as though you can say, like, well, would they be better if they were privately owned? They're privately owned. Like, can you imagine owning that organization? I'd be furious.
Yeah. But also, if I was owning that organization, I'd be trying to hire as many people who know what the fuck they're doing to come in and run the place, and not just picking up whatever drags are left lying around looking for a job.
Yeah, Nathan Brown.
Des Hasler.
Yeah. It's just so crazy. When you see professionals making terrible decisions, it shocks me. It really does.
Yeah, and it's more the fact that they're making consistently the same errors over and over and over again.
Yeah, like generational errors at this point.
Yeah. They've been around for 17 years now.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Should have figured it out by now. And I'm saying this as a West Tigers fan, you know. Should have figured it out by now. The Tigers finally figured it out. Took them decades. But the Titans aren't far away from that.
But can you imagine being a Titans fan? Like, you're living there on the Gold Coast. You've got a pretty nice stadium to go and watch footy at. And that's the show they put on for you every single year after year, the same shit. Like, at some point, it would just be like soul destroying as a footy fan anyway. You'd just be having to turn up to games and thinking, okay, I'm coming here to see the opposition play some good footy against this fucking side.
Yeah, look, I'd say that there's only genuinely two fan bases, possibly three actually,
mm-hmm.
who have historically dealt with misery over and over and over again to the point where they're hardened to it and they're good with dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Magpies fans.
Yep.
Parramatta fans.
Yep.
To a lesser degree, Penrith fans. But the Penrith fans are the ones who are watching the game prior to the 80s, and there's not many of those left.
No.
So they're a lesser extent sort of thing. But, yeah, Parramatta and West fans, absolutely. It's just the whole existence of those clubs has been lots of misery with little bits of success occasionally sprinkled in here and there.
Mm.
The Gold Coast, though, have been largely dire in all forms of and iterations of the club since they were born in 88.
I think I did an article on my website where, and it was really hard to word it in terms of like, I think it was how many NRL clubs and like, I'm like you, I use the term NRL from 1908 onwards because it's the one continuous competition. So it was like, how many NRL clubs from Queensland have been involved in the history of the competition? And it's like Brisbane, easy, South Queensland Crushers, you know, they're here and gone. North Queensland, easy. And then you get to the Gold Coast Titans and it's like, technically there's been two different clubs, but between them there might have been five different names. Like even the Titans, when they got their license, they announced themselves as the Gold Coast Dolphins, and then Redcliffe took them to court saying, one day we want to be in the NRL and we want to use our name. And so they had to change their name from the Gold Coast Titans from the Gold Coast Dolphins to the Titans. And it's just, what a fucking mess.
It has been. And I mean, they've gone broke and got bought out again a few times by the New South Wales Rugby League back in the day. I will say this, the reason, and just touch on something you said before, not to do with the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
The reason why I say NRL
is
it's basic shorthand.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if I say, you know, in the history of the NRL going back to 1908, everyone just goes, fair enough.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I do too.
Except for two or three people go, but it was the New South Wales Rugby Football League until 1980, and then it was the New South Wales Rugby League, and then it was the ARL, and then you had the Super League, and then it's like, I get it. I know. You don't need to tell me like I'm a fucking moron. I understand that.
Mm.
But it's shorthand. It's just easier. Everyone now in Australia, when they think rugby league, they think NRL. Just like if you go to talk about basketball to anyone outside of America, they just go, oh, the NBA is like, that's the top level basketball.
Well, and look, it would be the same if you talked about the history of the Queensland Cup, you know, and you go back to year dot for Queensland's Rugby League's premier club competition. Or it's the same thing with the New South Wales Cup. You know, it's, you know, you're basically talking about the reserve grade competition going back to year dot. You know, trying to explain to somebody that there's, in technical terms, there's been one linear competition that's had like four different names over the course of its history. And, you know, since 1998, that linear competition has been called the National Rugby League. It's just easier to say the NRL, and it's been the one competition right the way through, you know?
That's right. So, it's just, it's shorthand. But it's always the same few people. And I tended to ignore it after a fair while because it was always the same few, and it's always very few of them.
Yeah.
It's just, I get it, you know.
The thing is, they know. They know you know.
Exactly.
That's the thing. And so they've just been fucking annoying to be annoying.
That's basically it. But, Gold Coast, just to summarise, they're shit. They're not getting less shittier. And as a West Tigers fan who's watched their team be shit for quite a long time, I hope the Titans continue staying quite shit for a little bit so the Tigers have someone they can compete with and occasionally beat. How's that for you?
People need to understand the Tigers are aiming for 15th place, and it's easier if the Gold Coast are in 17th and locked in there. Then they've right.
Just comply. Just comply. Yeah. Help us out a little bit, yeah? Because just every time when the Dragons look like they're going to be out of dog shit, they turn out and win two or three games in a row, and then they jump above us on the ladder, and the Bulldogs do the same thing. So I just need a bit of compliance from at least one team out there to just go, you know what? We're just going to stay shit. It's our turn.
Yeah. Now
we might as well have the team that do it, our team that's good at it.
Now is the Tigers' time to be locked in a Titanic tussle with the Newcastle Knights for that 16th, 15th spot. One of them will prevail. And I'm going to say, I hope it's the West Tigers. I hope they get that 15th place.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be lovely. I'm trying to figure out who I want to see below them. And at the moment, I'm pretty sure I want to see the Titans and Parramatta below them.
Well, Parramatta, I mean, what a season they're having. I know Mitchell Moses is an important player, but he's not this important. And, I mean, people are getting on Brad Arthur, and you and me don't think much of Brad Arthur as a coach. But to be fair to Brad Arthur, he had a really, really handy backup halfback at that club that just happened to be his son, but was a pretty handy for a backup halfback who was locked in and wasn't going anywhere and was happy to be there. And he was forced out of the club by fans. And now Parramatta find themselves without a backup halfback at all. And it's absolutely killing them at the moment with Mitchell Moses out. But they've got a lot of their players who they re-signed at the absolute peak of what they'd ever produced and now slipping back towards more of what you expect to see out of them over their career. And they're in a real bad position right now. And I just don't see them turning it around when Moses comes back. I think this might be who the Eels are, which is worse than what I thought they'd be this year.
Oh, absolutely. I expect them to be a lot more competitive and capable than what they're showing at the moment.
Mm.
They just look pedestrian.
I didn't think they were going to be a premiership threat, but I didn't think that they were going to be like an also-ran. I thought that they'd make the finals just based on, you know, a little bit of experience that they've got, and they've been together as a team for a while now, so you'd think that they'd have a bit of cohesion. But it's not there. It's kind of crazy to see.
I was just going to say, on that thing about the Parramatta fans wanting Brad Arthur's son to be gone, because they were whinging about nepotism, weren't they?
Yeah.
So let's have a look at how nepotism's faring with the other clubs that have this issue with the coach having their son in one of the playmaker roles.
Okay.
So first one is, let's see, Penrith.
Yep, I've heard that the halfback is related to the coach. Turns out all right, though.
Yep. The next one is Brisbane.
Yeah, the hooker.
The hooker.
His dad is the coach and playing pretty well. Actually, a really important part of their team. It's really nice to see. I was going to say,
up until he started being coached by his old man, the majority of his career was as a very average depth player. And then as soon as he started being coached by his old man, my God, he's become really fucking good.
He did have a bit of – it looked like he was getting going when he played for the West Tigers, and then he did his knee really bad. He was out for the year. And it looked like his career could have very easily ended up just going nowhere after that. And when he did go to the Brisbane Broncos, there was a little bit of like, oh, is this going to turn out? And Kevin Walters said, like, you're a hooker now. That's it. And he's played really well, and he's really well suited to being behind that big pack. And, yeah, he's played very well for them. And it's been awesome to see. He really deserves it because he's stuck in there, and he basically has gone from being a almost journeyman player to he's a very important player and probably one of the top two or three teams in the comp. So, it's great.
Absolutely. And the last one, Parramatta fans, it pains me to say this one. Dragons. They're sitting in ninth on the ladder.
Still, how bad is Kyle Flanagan, honestly?
I know.
He's but fucking terrible.
They're ninth on the ladder, which is comfortably more than what Parramatta are.
That's true, but they're doing it in spite of Kyle Flanagan.
No, but what we're seeing here at the moment is nepotism on 100% of the occasions so far this year has been better for the clubs than whatever it is Parramatta's doing at the moment.
That's a good point.
Had nepotism available to them and they threw it away.
You got to go with that nepotism.
You got to take it.
Mm.
You have to take it. Mm. You are mad not to. So, you know, you got yourself to blame there, Para. Sucks to be you, I guess.
At least we know that when they do sack Brad Arthur, Trent Barrett is right there to step in, the architect.
Has he got a son?
No.
See, that's the thing. They need to hire a coach who has a son that can come into a playmaker role.
Who'd be, I think Brad Fittler, you could get him. He's got a son. I don't know if his son has chosen to play rugby league or rugby union yet.
If he's a rugby union player, then we've got to take any opportunity for Fittler to be an immortal away from him.
You
can't be an immortal and have a kid playing rugby union.
Exactly. He's fucked up.
I guess the only other opportunity is there any chance that Gutherson's dad can be the coach?
Yeah, but does Gutherson's dad have a son that can play football well or not?
Well,
because I haven't seen any.
Let's be honest, that's not an issue for the Dragons at the moment, is it?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, we fixed that issue. Gutho needs to get his old man to coach.
Speaking of coaches, can I just say, all those people that are questioning Ricky Stewart for any reason whatsoever, they're really bad people. I mean, Ricky Stewart is above reproach in every sense. And look, I understand that he won his first title by taking Graham Murray's job off him and basically riding his coattails to his first title in his first season. And every year after that has been extremely questionable. And I understand that Ricky Stewart just doesn't think he ever loses games based on him coaching or his team's ability. It's always the ref fucked them, or they were being disrespected by the opposition, or the rule book is wrong and needs to be changed. But anybody that says that Ricky Stewart isn't just awesome all round and a great coach and everything, they should look in the mirror, Andrew, because Ricky Stewart, if you look at his record, right, and then you ignore it, he's a wonderful coach.
Right. I saw a tweet by someone, and I've seen a few of these messages over the week. Mm-hmm. And it's the Jump In and Save Ricky Stewart Foundation, basically. Mm-hmm. So one said, a lot of people are very quick to dunk on Ricky Stewart, but his work with the Ricky Stewart Foundation and autism is really inspiring. And I have to reply to this, okay?
Okay. So
off the field, right? We're not talking anything to do with the Canberra Raiders club at the moment. This is just Ricky Stewart, the human being.
Yeah.
Off the field, away from the game. He's legitimately, not joking here, he's always been one of the most honourable humans there are out there. I know that he was helping a lot of women's rugby union and rugby league players in the early 90s, just in his spare time.
Mm-hmm.
He does do a phenomenal amount of work for charities. None of this is what's been put into question, though. Okay, he is an unbelievable asset to the human race off the field away from rugby league, right? But the one thing that he's been targeted for is the fact that in press conferences, he is a massive whinger.
Yes.
Right? That's the only thing that he's been criticized on. And it's been criticized because when you go out and you whinge every time you lose, instead of taking it on the chin and just going, you know what, we were beaten comfortably. We weren't good enough. And then while he will say that, there's always a caveat. There's always, but we had this, or but this happened, or but that happened, or but, oh, but. There's always a but. There's always something in there. There's always an issue. And at the end of the day, I don't have to look. I'm pretty certain he's won as close as possible to 50% neat of his games as an NRL coach.
Mm.
He's been around for a fucking long time as a coach. Even Tim Sheens has a slightly higher win percentage record than that. Mm-hmm. And he's, the last 20 years of Tim Sheens' coaching record, pretty fucking dire.
Yeah.
And I've said it before and I'll say it again. The grand final that he got with the West Tigers, you can't tell me that wasn't an absolute jag. It was great to watch. I'm glad they won it, of course.
Would you use the word fluke?
Yes. Because you look at what the Tigers did every season for the 5 years after that. Couldn't even make the finals once.
Yeah.
And it took the absolute genius of Benji Marshall and Robbie Farah both hitting their peaks at the same time and the game getting faster around the ruck. Those two little things just come together at the right time and they made the finals again for two straight years and should have been in the finals for another 2 years after that. But the club botched that as well. And then they were in just complete wilderness for another decade after that. Obviously, he wasn't there for it all, but it's not like he left the club in a better place than when he took it over.
No, no.
And a good coach will do that.
And Ricky Stewart's been, like he went to the Roosters, right? Won Graham Murray's title. And then, was it Cronulla he went to next or was it the Eels? Like,
I think it was Cronulla, but Cronulla were on, I believe they were on the verge of, they were close to the premiership window, as we say, but they were an aging squad. So they're on the verge of needing a rebuild.
Yeah. And that, like, this is pre, what would you call it? Pre ASADA concern, pre salary cap audit concern.
Yeah.
And so, like, his time at Cronulla was not good. His time at Parramatta was not good. He goes down
He got to Parramatta, and they were basically just an absolute basket case, and they're hoping that they could just get anyone to come in and fix it up. And I'll be honest, I'll defend him to some degree here. What he walked into at Parramatta was an absolute fucking dog's breakfast. No one was going to make anything of that.
And then he goes down to Canberra, where they were struggling to get a coach of any quality, and they were like, oh, Ricky's back, Ricky's back. And I know they lost a grand final, but, you know, you don't have to buy a new trophy cabinet for losing grand finals. So that's not an achievement.
No, that's right. It's hard to say. Like, he'll have like two or three mediocre to average seasons at Canberra, and then I have one really, really strong season, and then choke in the finals, and then it'll be just back in the doldrums again, midfield, just below the top eight, and then bang, they're back in again, and then it's back down again. And so he just goes on this constant wave of, you know, two or three crap seasons and then one really good one, but never being premiership winning good.
Even Matthew Elliott had one good season at Penrith, hey?
Did he?
Yeah. Well, I think we finished second. There was one year there we finished second. Okay. And it pissed me off because I knew it meant that we were stuck with his prick for another few years. And Ricky Stewart, like, he's had one good season at Canberra. And that's it. And he's been there a lot longer than Matthew Elliott was at the Penrith Panthers. And, you know, everything comes down from the top, and the coach really sets the tone for the club. And when the coach thinks that he's never actually lost a game on merit, guess what the players start to think?
Mm. Very true. Well, look, shout out to Ricky Stewart. It's his 500th game as a coach this week.
Nah, fuck him.
And just checked his win percentage. It's at 50.5.
Yeah, congratulations, Ricky.
He's had 252 wins and 244 losses and three draws.
I can't wait until the Panthers face them at the end of the year and we take their soul once again. And Ricky can fucking piss and moan and cry about it. He's a sook and a whinger.
There we go. yeah.
But at least he's a below average coach.
Yeah. Look, I wouldn't say he's below average. I'd just say he's average because, you know, a win percentage of 50.5, if that's not the perfection, the perfect explanation of what average is, I think that's pretty much nailed it, hasn't it? Surely a good coach is doing better than 50% and a poor one's doing less than 50.
I say below average because any time the Canberra Raiders are in a game that is meaningful of any sort, they lose.
Well, look, I'll let you have that.
thank you.
Braden Trindle.
Yeah, he caught. Last time I saw, it was a speeding offence, was it? Or
so what I've seen around the trap. So I don't know how many of these are accurate. One says he went mid range.
Oh, and, okay.
And tested positive for cocaine.
Oh, someone spiked his drink, the poor guy. Exactly. How many times do NRL players get their drink spiked with cocaine? It's terrible.
It's an epidemic is what it is.
It really is. It really, really is.
We've gone from the COVID pandemic to the cocaine in rugby league players' drinks epidemic.
I thought dancing on TikTok was bad. But this epidemic is much worse. Look, there's a couple of things I know automatically about this situation. First of all, it's not his go, Andrew.
It's not his go.
And secondly, he's a good bloke.
Oh, look, this is known. Yeah. I'm sure, and I'm waiting on it because he's a Sharks boy. Expect Buzz to come out with an absolute great story about how he saved 35 million people in Gaza from being bombed to death.
Mm.
Just with his kicking game alone. I don't know how he manages that, but did you know
he's got a background? He's got a background.
Has he?
Yeah. He's got a background.
I mean, they all do.
I don't know anything about it, but he's just got a background.
Is that like a desktop wallpaper or a green screen or something?
Yeah, pretty much. It's some rolling hills, the green. All I can tell you about it.
And he's going right through all of them into the clouds.
Look, who hasn't been in a situation where you think, listen, I've just got to drive home. I'm not connecting this to him, but I just got to drive home. I am totally fucked up. I've been drinking all day. I'm just going to have a little bump just to get me focused, just so I can get home.
It's a safe thing to do. You're doing something positive. You're trying to focus.
I'm pretty sure there was a thing that the RTA had on TV that said, just a little bump, get home safely.
Yeah. What's a little bump?
Yeah.
Just make sure they're not little bumps that you feel on the outside of the car.
Yeah.
They may not be good.
Exactly.
So it looks like he's been stood down. This is what I reckon is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to play too many more games for Cronulla, not because of this,
mm-hmm.
but because they do have two pretty decent young halves in the waiting, mm-hmm. and one of them is Cade Dykes.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to be waiting for an opportunity for too long. He'll come in and he'll just be absolutely champing at the bit, so to speak, given that he missed all of last year. So I reckon it might be one of those things where Cade Dykes comes in and just takes the job away, and I don't think Trindle will get it back.
I wonder.
It won't happen immediately. I think they'll give it to Atkinson first, but I think I think Dykes will eventually get it, and he'll just run with it from there.
Yeah, he's a handy player. I wonder if when the Cronulla Sharks pull you in just generally and say on an issue where it might be drug related. I wonder if they decide to stand you down because you had them or because you didn't share them.
I thought you were going to say something along the lines of, how does that conversation start? And he goes, look, I know this is going to sound hypocritical.
It's like, dude, okay, first of all, tut, tut, but you got any more on you?
10% discount. To you, in punishment, just share that shit around a little bit. Where's the nose candy, fella? Hey? Look after the bros, bro.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But, yeah, I don't think he'll play too many more times. I think they'll just let him go. And Manly will probably sign him because they do need a 5'8".
It's just, it's really bad timing for him. Like, he just has established himself in that Cronulla side. And, you know, because he's been in and out of it. He's been, like, having to play the apprentice role as a half. And he just established himself. So we'll see how it turns out, I guess.
And had been playing well.
Yeah, yeah, had been, yeah.
So, if it's true and he's been found guilty of doing that, well, I'm saying he's just fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's silly.
There's no excuses for it nowadays. What else have we got going on?
Penrith have committed to playing two games in Mudgee from 2025. So, they've got their stadium rebuild, which will take place, and they'll be without Penrith Football Stadium from 2025 to an undisclosed finishing date. It's going to be longer than 12 months, I think, and then their capacity of the stadium will go up by 16 seats. But the good news is it'll cost $300 million. But it was an interesting one that they committed to Mudgee.
I was going to say, how much is it going to cost for the membership for those 16 seats?
Yeah. <they're> like,
Hey, they will be the gold-plated seats.
They will be, yeah. But, yeah, so I found that interesting. Whether they stick with their deal at Bathurst, which has been pretty handy for them, we'll find out. Because it'll be interesting if they did two trips to the country in the 1 year. And so I found that interesting when they announced that. And other good news for the Panthers is that Nathan Cleary is back this week. So they're pretty much going to be almost, I think they will be actually full strength against the North Queensland Cowboys when they face them up in North Queensland. So, and we've talked about the North Queensland Cowboys being soft, very, very soft. If the Panthers turn up in that game, it could be a big scoreline. So we'll see how that turns out. But it's really weird watching the Cowboys play this year because they've got the talent. There's no doubt about that. But they just don't have any commitment whatsoever defensively. And at some point, you've got to start looking at the coaching of that side because, they should not be this bad. There is just no way they should be this bad.
Oh, God, no. It's baffling as to... No, I suppose how quickly they've dropped off and by how far.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the injured list here. It says Cleary back for round 8. Dylan Edwards.
Yeah, Dylan Edwards. Injury. Yeah, he picked up, I think it was a little bit of a hammy strain in last week's game. So I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't start, though. I wouldn't be shocked if they had Dane Laurie come in late and they gave Edwards the week off.
Yeah, well, it looks like they haven't ruled him out. And it says yeah. Taylor May might be about to return as well. He was off for personal reasons.
Yeah, that hasn't come out what that was, but, you know, it's good that he's able to play this week.
Yes. I can't think what else it was. There was something else in the back of my mind that I had to raise, and I forgot it.
Yeah. Was it NRL-related?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know what it was, Andrew. I'm not a freaking mind reader.
What I hire you for? God damn it. Now we have to try and find out what it was. No, I don't know. I did get to see a few games on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Not many, but which ones were they? Let me have a look. I've got to try and remember now. They're on Saturday. Right. Gold Coast Manly. I will say that that game was an absolute fucking dog's breakfast and I hated watching it.
Yeah. It went the way you expected it to, though. The Titans scored a lot of points, but let in way more. And yeah. Manly really should have put on more points in that game.
Yeah, I thought Manly's defense was crap.
Mm-hmm.
And the Titans' attack was better than I expected, but everything else about them was as garbage as I expected.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, it was raining a little bit, but still, at the end of the day, 64 points were scored in under 70 minutes.
Yeah.
Wasn't holding them back too much. Brisbane versus Canberra. I kind of was a little bit disappointed that Brisbane didn't absolutely crush them in the end, because they were up 24 to 6 or something at half time.
Yeah, it felt a little bit. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, it was only like a bit over a dozen points scored in the second half.
Mm.
I mean, Canberra's defense was a hell of a lot better in the second half. It had to be. But I thought Brisbane were so clear that they were free to play however the hell they wanted to, and they seemingly played a little bit more safe in the second half. And I don't know why they bothered doing that, because, I mean, they had Canberra on the ropes.
Yeah, it reminded me of watching Penrith in these sorts of games where they look like they're going to put 60 points on and they kind of just put the cue in the rack and ride the rest of the game out. It reminded me a lot of that. It's played in torrential rain conditions, and considering it, like, the quality of football was absolutely outstanding.
And, oh, it was.
Like, that Broncos pack is something else. Like, I just love watching them play because, you know, Pat Carrigan, who is the size of a front rower and he's got the mobility of a back rower, he put in so much work in that game. When they get Payne Haas back, and I think they might have him back this week, actually, with Adam Reynolds, they're just a nightmare of a side to take on. And I still, honestly, I look at them and they look like a premiership-winning team to me. And it's not just blasting teams out of there either. They do a lot of smart things that a really good footy side has to do. They stick in there when the times are tough, and they just have so much going for them. And with Madden stepping into that halfback role as their backup, and he's been fantastic as their backup, to the point where, like, if Adam Reynolds gets injured again going forward this season, I wonder if they would ever consider just keeping Madden in the side, so they don't have to chop and change their lineup and have Reynolds go back to reserve grade.
I don't know. See, Reynolds has been pretty bloody good this year, so I don't think they put him in reserve grade. I don't know what they'd do there, though. It's a good problem to have, though.
Yeah, it is, definitely, yeah.
It just so happens that Reynolds comes back, and it's the same week that Ezra Mamm looks like he could be missing a few weeks because of a hand injury or a finger injury.
Yeah, I didn't see that injury occur, hey?
No, neither did I. I remember him looking a bit lamish, I guess.
Mm.
But it didn't seem to impact him too much. From memory, he finished the game. I can't remember.
He is one of my favourite players to watch.
Oh, I love watching him. He's fucking brilliant.
He just is so exciting. And like, he everything, he's like 100% committed into it. Like, every kick chase, everything. And like, he makes things happen. It's so exciting to watch him.
He is phenomenal. Had a very steady sort of start to his career when he first came into grade.
Mm-hmm.
But it was only briefly that he was like that. And then once he started becoming, like, once he realized that he was going to be the regular 5'8", his confidence just soared, and he's just been playing phenomenal footy ever since. I love watching him play, man. He's phenomenal. He's just, I can't talk long enough about him, man. Probably the most exciting 5'8" that's come along since Benji, in my view.
Yeah, he probably would be. Hey, I can't think of anybody that would be up there in terms of excitement as a 5'8". Because he can just break a game open, as we saw in the grand final. Like, that should have been his coronation moment, really. And it just didn't work out that way. But, like, that's what he can do on the biggest stage. He showed it.
Absolutely, man. He's the reason why I watch the Broncos play at the moment, because a lot of great stuff will happen through their forwards.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just little bits of other great footballers you're seeing. Like, his constant support play is very Terry Lamb-like. He's just always around the ball somewhere.
Mm.
Speed off the mark, that is very Benji Marshall-ish in Benji's early days.
The fact that he can get to such a high speed at such a two steps.
Yeah, like he's gone. There's not a lead up or anything. He's just already gone. It's over.
Explosive, man. Can sniff out intercepts. Can know when to make the right play if there's a breakaway play on. If it's got to be a kick, if it's got to be a pass, he knows which option to go with. Just so many great things about his game. He's just phenomenal, man. I can't talk high enough about him. I love watching him play.
Imagine the Australian halves with, like, and I know it's probably going to be Munster, but what if it was Cleary and Mam in the halves? That would be just unbelievable.
That would be insane, especially if you had an Australian test pack.
Mm.
Good luck. Yeah. Good luck. but I wouldn't be surprised if that's not too far away from him.
It's like I could see where Munster, because Munster's got this problem. I think it's a knee problem from memory. And he's already said it's something that he's going to have to carry for the rest of the season. And those sort of things can very quickly turn into, I've got to carry it for the rest of my career, you know?
Exactly.
So I could see where Munster maybe steps down from test footy. And I can't think of anybody I'd want in there ahead of Mam. You know, that you've got, I guess, someone like a Burton would be in there as well, but I'd take Mam ahead of Burton for certain. And it rhymes as well.
That's right. that would be an absolute given. As I said, I can't speak high enough of him. I love him. Fantastic player. Now I remember what it is I was going to mention before.
Okay.
Dale Finucane has announced his retirement effective immediately.
Yeah, from head knocks and concussions. And this will be taken in the wrong way by some people in the media. They'll say, well, this is a sign that concussions are not being treated properly. This is actually a sign that rugby league takes concussion seriously, that you've got a player of this ilk and that is on this much money that is retiring effectively immediately because of concussions, and so that they're not exacerbated and that he doesn't get any more of them going forward. I see this as a good sign for how concussions are being handled in the game. And it's sad that he has to retire, but I'm glad that the right decision was made.
100% agree. I also like the fact that instead of doing the old school blokey thing of just run it off, players are nowadays going, no, you know what? I do need to think about this. I don't want to live like, you know, I don't want to have my whole mental health thing and all that sort of stuff just completely fall apart as I approach my 40s and 50s.
Because,
you know, most of these guys who are playing at the moment are dads or about to be dads, and they're going to have young kids. And I like the fact they're thinking about that so they can not only enjoy that part of their, you know, children growing up and that sort of thing, being able to remember that and enjoy it, which is probably at the front of their mind. But they can also live longer, live healthier. You know, there's so many benefits. And what's the downside? You miss an extra 30 or 40 games of NRL footy.
But it's a difficult decision. Like, can you imagine, say you're on even $300,000 as a footy player, which is, he'd be on more than that. $300,000 more, and can you get through 30 more games for that? You know, it's a lot of money to walk away from. And that's why it's good to see a decision like this being made, because there's so much on the line for the club. There's so much on the line for him personally, and the right decision was still made, even though there's all of those reasons to keep trying and keep going. And I think it's a really good sign for the game. I kind of look at it in the same way that, you know, when you see a player, they get pinged for, say, using performance-enhancing drugs, And the mm-hmm. first thing the media does is they say, oh, they're rampant in the game. And it's like, no, the reason that we found this player that's used performance-enhancing drugs is because drugs are tested for. And it's a good thing. You know, we're finding the people that are cheating the sport. It's a similar sort of thing here. So not that he's cheating the sport or anything, but it's just like you can very easily put a negative connotation on this when, in fact, it's actually a positive for the sport. That we're at a point now where we have these decisions made and they're made for the right reasons. So he had a really solid career, played very well at the Melbourne Storm. I felt like he never really got going at the Cronulla Sharks. It always felt like when he started to get some good footing under his belt, he'd pick up an injury here or there or another concussion, unfortunately. But he's had a really solid career. It's good seeing. He's a good guitar player as well.
Yeah, that first season at the Sharks, I think it was his only one where he played the whole year, and he was very, very good there. But yeah, that's the thing too. I mean, every player knows that they're not going to be playing when they turn 40. They're not going to get close to that. So you've still got 25 years of work that you have to do to, you know, keep making money and keep looking after your family, that sort of stuff. And that's going to be a pretty hard job to do if you've copped that many head knocks that you can't do basic tasks. Like if you cop that many that driving a car becomes a pain or you're not allowed to do it because you've had so many head knocks that, you know, driving a car causes all sorts of headaches and stuff like that. And, you know, it's things like that. It's little everyday things. I mean, we heard about Sean Valentine many years ago talking about how he wakes up in the morning and for a long time after he retired, would wake up and vomit like he still had concussions. He'd forget where he put his keys the night before. Just go, you know, he was still in his 30s when they was dealing with that.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah.
It's a horrible thing. So this is why it's very important that players are aware of this and they know that, you know what, I'm not going to be playing this game forever. I'm not going to be playing for much more than a few years. I do have to think about the rest of my working life, my family, all that sort of stuff. There's a lot of life left to live for these guys. You know, so, you know, on average, it's 50 years after they retire, basically. It's a bloody long time to live, especially if you've got, you know, constant headaches and migraines and all the other sort of issues that come with CTE.
Yeah.
So, no, he's made the right call. And there should be absolutely no shame on him or the NRL or anything like that at all about this. It's absolutely the right decision by all involved.
100%. Now, I expect him to remain involved in some capacity. I know that he does a lot of work with the Rugby League Players Association. He's pretty high up in that organisation. And
man, he'll also make a bloody good defence coach.
Yeah, he probably would, yeah. But I think he'll be one of those guys that is around the trap still. So that'll be good to see as well.
Absolutely. And yeah, I guess it also means that the Sharks have a bit of coin free in the cap at the end of the year.
Yeah, I wonder, like it wouldn't be huge amounts of money, I don't think, but they'll be able to get a solid player. It's funny, I was joking on Twitter last weekend that after the James Fisher-Harris announcement that he's going to the New Zealand Warriors next year, I basically spent the entire weekend scouting every single other forward in the NRL. And forwards. Like, if you need a good forward, you've got so many you can choose from. It's a real embarrassment of riches in the NRL at the moment with forwards. Like, I remember writing, man, it must have been like 6 to 8 years ago now that the NRL was in a golden era of forwards even back then. And it feels like it just keeps getting better and better. It's really extraordinary.
Yeah, I think it's because the forwards in the NRL have a constantly evolving and expanding role to play. Whereas in the past, like you think back to the 90s and your best forwards were just big blokes with a big motor who could just punch holes through lines. And if they had an offload on them, you're playing test footy.
Yeah.
That was basically it. Now they've got to run certain angles, be able to draw players and, you know, create gaps for a centre to exploit for the wingers. And they've got to be able to catch bombs and stuff like that. They're just in playing more like centres, but without sacrificing any of the forward play that they have to also do.
Yeah, and that, like they've got that they've got mobility. Like that's why it stands out so much when you see a pack in the NRL that isn't mobile. And I'm thinking like Souths, I think North Queensland a little bit. When you see a team that hasn't got mobility in the pack, it stands out in a huge way. And then yeah. I think of a team like the Broncos, who their forward pack is absolutely gigantic and mobile. It's really that's why I love watching them, because it's like this super pack. It's incredible. It's you know, and there's three or four players you could get from the Broncos that aren't even starting for them, that they'd be a really good handy player for a handy pickup for a team like the Cronulla Sharks. So, like, I think some of these teams like Penrith and Cronulla now, who are looking for to fill a hole in their forward pack, like they're fine. They're both going to find someone really good.
Oh, absolutely. And in no time.
Yeah.
I think that might have been all I could think of that I needed to raise.
Excellent. Well, let's look at the upcoming games, eh?
Let's do that. I do have some stats. Where are they? Here we go. All right, first up, we've got the Warriors versus the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
The Warriors have scored at least 20 points in all of their last 11 games in New Zealand against the Titans.
Wow. It's not a good sign for the Titans.
On the flip side, Des Hasler coach sides have won their last three games against the Warriors. His last loss as a coach against the Warriors was in 2020. However, he has lost his last 12 games as coach.
There is that, yes.
That's a big one. I expect the Warriors to win this one by 8,000 or 9,000 points.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think that after last week's disappointment against the Dragons, where they didn't play well at all, they go back home, it'll be a sellout crowd. The Titans, that you know, they're on this losing streak. They're now starting to break records over a much longer time front. Like their records in terms of how many average points they're giving up, when you're two or three games into the season, it's like, all right. Now we're starting to get to a point where it's like, okay, now you're starting to really get some records that even the West Magpies start going, man, what's wrong with you guys? I could see the Warriors just tearing through this Titans team and scoring. Like if they scored 50, I wouldn't be shocked. If they scored 60, I'd be like, oh yeah, that's pretty good. And if it really goes bad and they score 70, you know, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, they scored 70 against the Titans. I'd be like, yeah, they had a good game.
Yeah, it does look like it's going to augur very poorly for the Titans. Mm. Dragons versus Roosters.
Okay, what stats we got going there?
Roosters have won 20 of their last 50 games played on Anzac Day, and the Dragons have won 9 of their last 15 games against the Roosters on Anzac Day.
That's an interesting one.
Neither of them are good for the Roosters.
Yeah. I've tipped the Roosters in this one just because the Dragons are a little bit all over the place, but I just think the Roosters will probably get the points. I don't think the Roosters are a very good team either, but I think that they're better than the Dragons.
They are better than the Dragons. But
this is the way I'd say it, Andrew. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for a long time, I had a lot more faith than most did in the Roosters, and I think that's finally disappeared.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm going to pick the Dragons in a close one.
Okay. Can I also say to all those Dragons fans that whenever I say the Panthers have money for a forward and they keep saying Blake Laurie, please take Blake Laurie. Can you all shut up, please? We're not taking Blake Laurie. No. We won't do it. We'll not save you.
Are you sure?
No, it is not happening.
No. Are we sure, though?
We are 100% sure.
I mean, he might be available.
I'm sure he is available. Let him go somewhere else. Let him go and play the Thrall or something.
the rule.
Yeah.
Storm versus the Rabbitohs. Here's the big stat.
Mm-hmm.
South have lost all 17 games they've played in Victoria.
Holy crap.
Yep. A South loss here will make this just the 11th time in their entire history that they've recorded less than two wins after the opening eight rounds. And wow. It'll be the fourth time they've done that since returning from exile.
Wow. This could be a cricket score.
Look, it could be. I don't think I've seen the Storm attack really click at all yet. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that I'll have the Storm to win, but I dare say it'll be something like 30-10 or something like that. I think they'll do it comfortably, but I don't think they'll rack up a cricket score. I just haven't seen their attack click enough yet to make me convinced that they'll figure it out here.
I think they'll score 50.
Hey, that's fair. South have led in 196 points so far this year, which is, that's a whack.
Yeah.
It's about 32 points a game.
Yeah, it's not looking good for them.
No. Manly versus Parramatta. Parramatta have won six of their last 15 NRL games, conceding an average of 29.7 points per game. And Manly have won just six of their last 19 games against Parramatta since round 24, 2014.
I reluctantly picked the Seagulls in this one. I think these teams are very, very close to one another. And honestly, I think games like this are going to determine which of them makes the finals, like because they're so close. There's a lot of close teams in the NRL this year. We talked about that in the preseason. And so this is really vital that for whoever wins this match. And I just, the Eels, like the way they fell apart last week against the Dolphins, I can't shake that. So that's why I've picked the Seagulls.
Yeah, this is the thing with Manly. If they get into the mood of scoring points, they can put them on. Mm. So I will go with Manly in this one as well. Now, next one, I'm going to guess, see if you can figure out the answer to this one.
Okay.
When was the last time? This is the Tigers versus Broncos. When was the last time the Broncos lost a game at Campbelltown?
I'm going to say they lost the game. I'm going to be really, really crazy. 2003.
No.
What? They've never lost.
When you said two, I said no.
It's further
round back. Round 15, 1992.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap.
They've had nine wins and a draw there since that time. Seven of those wins are against the West Tigers, and the draw was the first time they played there against the Tigers.
Wow. I thought I was being outrageous by saying I was going to say 2003. I thought I'm just going to say something stupid. That's insane.
That's insane. Yeah, the other one here is the Tigers have won just 10 of their 33 games at Campbelltown since 2014, and they've lost their last nine games there.
Wow.
So their last win at Campbelltown was in 2020 against the Cowboys.
Wow. It was sad that they had that big loss, in front of a big crowd a few weeks ago. I hope that they can put in a good performance, but I have a feeling the Broncos are going to Bronco them. I think the Broncos look amazing, and I don't think even Benji Marshall could coach this West Tigers team to and not flogging in this game.
I'm going to say that the Broncos will win by a very similar scoreline to what they did against Canberra. And that might be wishful thinking, I know, but that's what I'm going with. I don't think the Tigers' defence has shown signs of that brittleness and complete giving up that they had in all the seasons prior. I think they're showing a lot more consistency and ticker.
Yeah.
I'm certain they're not going to win, but I don't think they'll get the hiding that I would normally expect them to get in this game. If this was the Tigers of last year, I'd be expecting the Broncos to put 90 on.
Legit. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a capitulation. I just think the Broncos are going to be that good.
Oh, yeah. And look, Tigers got him at a worse time with Reynolds and Haas all coming in.
Yeah, terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Cowboys versus Penrith. Penrith have won 22 of the last 26 games in Queensland, which is since 2020.
That's insane.
Penrith also, though, have lost their last two games in Queensland against the Cowboys. Their last win against the Cowboys in Queensland was round 19, 2020.
I think one of those games they basically, because I was talking to some people on Twitter about this, they ran out the entire reserve grade team against the Cowboys. Yeah. Look, with how soft the Cowboys pack is, and we know what the Panthers pack is like, Cleary's back and they've really missed him. It could be a big win for the Panthers. But we know what the Penrith is like. Like, they'll get a 20-point lead and they'll just hold it. So I don't think they're going to put on 50 or anything, but I expect them to win this game very, very comfortably.
I'll go with Penrith to put on 40.
Okay.
Yeah. Dolphins v. Knights. Newcastle have won 44.35% of games when Kalen Ponga plays and 38.89% when he hasn't. And that's since round 1, 2018.
That's a real low stat.
Since 1988, the Knights have won 18 of their 65 games played in Queensland against Queensland-based sides. And all up, they have 25 wins from 78 games played in Queensland.
When you think, you know what? When you think about the Knights' entire history, and they had the Johns phenomena, right?
Mm-hmm.
But outside of the Johns phenomena, it's been pretty rough, hey?
I think, as the young people would say, they've been rather mid.
They have.
Yeah.
They have.
Like, but 25 from 78 in Queensland since 1988.
That's what got me.
That's pretty atrocious, to be honest.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So, but it's the Dolphins. The Dolphins are one of those. They're like the Titans team when the Titans were half decent. Like, one week they'll put a big score, and the next week they'll have a big score put on them.
But
I think the Dolphins will win this.
I think the Dolphins are a solid footy team. I don't think that they're. Like, I can't see them beating the big guns in the competition, but I think that for most teams, that like that middle pack, I think that they, you know, it comes down, if it's a close game, they're going to be in it. And if you're off, they're going to beat you pretty well. I feel like that's where I've got the Dolphins sort of pegged. So, yeah, and against the Knights, I think that they could belt the Knights, especially at home.
Yeah. The last game of the round, Canberra versus the Sharks. Sharks have won 9 of their last 12 NRL games. However, they've lost their last 4 games in Canberra. Their last win in Canberra was in round 10, 2018.
Oh, wow. Now, for this one, this game for me is close to the point where I did my tip. Hang on, let me find my tipping. Because I could go back and forth on these teams like every 10 minutes, you know. So I'm going to go refer back to the tip that I did on my website. Let me find it.
I was going to say, it's one of those games. Like every team has one of those opponents who they just list for some unknown reason.
Yeah.
And Canberra always lists for a game against Cronulla.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what form they're in prior to it or not. They always live for that game. That's just my observation anyway. Sharks attackers looking pretty solid at the moment. Defense is not too bad either. Canberra is a bit wishy-washy. They go through moments where they look like they could win a game.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the same match, they'll go through moments where they look like they actually are actively trying to hand the opposition the win.
Look, I feel as though the Raiders probably think that they're a little better than they are, and we know what the Sharks are like. Like, the Sharks beat the teams they should beat, and they don't beat the teams that they're really on the same level with, or that are better than them. So, This is a tough one. And the Raiders are coming off that flogging. I just don't know who to pick. I'm going to go with the Sharks.
I'm going to go with the Sharks as well.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not overly convinced by the Raiders.
I'll say this about these two teams. This is how I feel about them, and this is why it's so difficult for me. I think the floor of the Raiders is below the floor of the Sharks, right? Mm-hmm. I think the best that the Raiders can do is above what the best that the Sharks can do. Does that make sense?
Okay, so you're kind of saying then that the Sharks are somewhat more consistent than Canberra.
Definitely, 100%. Yeah. If they're both at their very best, if you could wave a magic wand and say both those teams are going to be at their best on Sunday, I'd say yep. I'm picking the Raiders, right?
Okay.
If you said both these teams are going to be at their worst on Sunday, I'd pick the Sharks.
Yep.
That's how I feel about it. I'm going with the Sharks on the consistency.
That's fair.
It's a tough choice, though.
I'm assuming my cat, who you might have just said, probably, I'm assuming they disagreed.
No, I didn't hear a cat. And it's not a cat. Okay. It's like a panther.
It's just whinged again. I mean, no. If it does it a third time, I'm going to have to throw it outside.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you say throw. It's kind of like a...
Usher.
I was going to say Fred Flintstone, you know, where he throws the big panther out?
I've got a very large rake.
Mm-hmm.
I just prod it at the cat and hope it goes away. See, sometimes it breaks the rake, but you know, they're pretty cheap at Bunnings.
If it was a normal cat, people should be concerned. Andrew doesn't have a normal cat. For some reason, Andrew and his family chose to get you've got a leopard and then you've got those bush cats that are like giant and are they called several cats or something like that? Andrew's got the next step down from that cat. It just walks around going, wow, like that.
It just makes random noises that aren't cat noises.
No.
Just in case a human turns up outside, they think they might have a chance. No.
Have you ever tried to wash your cat?
Yes.
And how'd that turn out?
The first time, it put its claw into the back of my thumb at the knuckle that's closest to your palm.
Yeah.
And I could see the bone in the gap that it created. So it was about 3 years after that I tried to do it again. And the second time, I had to pop it in the shower.
Yeah.
And shut the door. And take the nozzle off, because they've got the nozzle you can take off the shower thing. So I had to take that off there and loop it underneath the handle on the shower so the water came out while I was hanging the shower over the top and just wash the cat from the top of the shower while I'm on the outside and it's inside. It doesn't mind the water. It doesn't like the soap bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we found some very pet-friendly soap that doesn't hurt the animal and stuff like that. But, it also doesn't like being... restrained in any way. But even if you're sitting down and it sits on your lap, if you grab it and trying to give it a cuddle, it's like, fuck off.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here because I want to sit here. It's not an invitation for you to pick me up, asshole. Don't fucking touch me, all right?
That's basically the
attitude.
You've got the sort of cat that, like, if you're in a room with it and it was pissed off at you for some reason, like, you've got a legitimate fear of like, hey, fuck, what's this fucking thing going to do to me? It's not a normal cat.
No,
like, I feel not. Like you're going to find out one day you should have registered it in some way. You know what I mean?
With some sort of, I don't know, maybe a zoo.
Yeah. Like not just get, it's like not just microchipped, but it's like part of a wildlife tagging registration.
Continue to say, Have you tried elephant tranquilizer? What for? I said, you know, if your cat gets a bit hostile, you need to give it medicine. I don't give it medicine. Nope. Take it to the vet.
Oh, man.
It's got a cage. We take it to the vet and it fucking hates that cage.
You've got the sort of cat where they don't use a syringe. They use one of those sticks with the syringe at the end of it.
Now, what they do is they get a like a dead lamb carcass and they just rub the medicine into the meat and then just throw it into the cage of the cat and wait 5 minutes. Oh, there it is, just skeleton left.
Yeah.
That's how we know it's taking the medicine. You're good, not cat.
What made you just pick that cat? Was it like a really cute kitten or something?
It was.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely was.
Mm-hmm.
Full of energy, very good around kids, which is surprising, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Very low maintenance. They don't molt much.
Mm-hmm.
They are very healthy animals. Yeah. They don't need to be taken to the vet very often. They are surprisingly, apparently, impervious to cancer.
Oh, really? Wow.
Mm. So there's a lot of benefits there. They are generally low maintenance. They don't need to be washed very often. They're very clean animals.
I guess the thing with that sort of cat is that, like, it's like it probably looks at you lot as just being around its house. It's not really like a normal pet.
I'd say it probably looks at us, not that we're around its house, but more of, when are you going to die so I can have a decent feed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, so weird.
Every now and then, just got to remind it, sorry, cat, but, you know, your lifespan is much, much shorter than mine, even though I've given you quite a head start. You've already overtaken me. So, you know, sucks to be you. That's basically it.
We used to have a rugby league podcast, hey?
We did. It was great. Can I get into something else that's not rugby league?
Yeah, go for it.
Formula One.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one thing I want to talk about here. Did you see the incident involving Lance Stroll and Daniel Ricciardo?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was really nice of Daniel Ricciardo to act as a brake.
Lance Stroll has come out and he said, oh, there was this weird concertina effect leading into the corner and the car in front of me just stopped for no reason coming into the hairpin. And going, there's a key word there, and that's hairpin.
Yeah.
Like, most people know that when you come into a hairpin, you can't just keep going fast straight ahead. There's an element of turning and slowing down that are required in order to achieve staying on the track and getting around the hairpin. And he's just gone, no. It's like, geez, it's like Gran Turismo. You just rev up the other car and use them as your brake and then overtake them that way while everyone else just skittles off the road.
It was like he thought real life was like the cars around him in real life were ghost cars and he'd just be able to drive through them really quick.
Yeah.
It was bizarre.
So he was blaming the whole concertina effect that went on in front of him. And Oscar Piastri, who was the car in front of Ricciardo, so he was caught up in the middle of that concertina effect. Mm. He said, none of us crashed. You had more chance to break because we were in the hairpin when you come down. You were still on the straight. We'd already broke. And you can see if you watch the replay, you can see the lockup from Piastri.
Mm.
Ricciardo's responded in kind with that. He didn't hit Piastri. Mm. He went close, but he didn't hit him. And the Stroll's just gone. You still see it on his in the middle of the steering wheel. It's got on there what gear they're in.
Mm.
And he just shifted from fourth down to third when he hit Ricciardo coming into a hairpin. No. You're like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
That's nuts.
That was crazy.
I saw the result that Verstappen won it, and it's like Formula One would be incredible if Verstappen wasn't involved. It would be like just the most amazing motorsport to watch, but he just wins everything. And so I just find it too boring at the moment. I can't do it.
What they should do, if we're going to make this a proper test on each driver's ability, every week they drive each other's cars, and you have to drive each other. You have to drive every car on the grid at some stage during the year.
Well, I was actually thinking, because I watched the highlights of the race on YouTube, and I was actually thinking, like, if, because the Formula One is privately owned company now, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if the company went to him and said, we will give you $100 million to switch to Sauber? Would he take that? Like, would he take it? I think he'd have to, hey? $100 million.
I'm just going to see how much he's currently getting paid.
I'm going to say he's getting paid $38 million a year.
It says he... he's getting $55 million for 2024.
Whoa. $100 million.
So I don't think it's enough.
I'm talking, though, a lump sum, $100 million in his bank account tomorrow, and he gets whatever Sauber pays him, which is not going to be $55 million, granted, but it's going to still be a nice amount. I think you're probably right. It's not enough, is it?
If you watch any of the Max Verstappen videos of what he does in his spare time,
yeah,
he doesn't need money.
Oh, of course not.
What he's done... No, I'm saying this, and it's going to come across in a completely different way, okay? He's got himself his apartment that he lives in. Obviously, yeah. He owns that. But he's just built himself a complete racing sim. And he just sits in that. That's all he does on his days off, is he does that.
Oh, I've actually seen that. Yeah, that's his thing, hey?
Yeah. Like, the room that he's racing sim in is just an empty room. There's no paraphernalia. There's no memorabilia. There's no lounges. There's no TVs. There's nothing. It's just his racing sim in one room, and that's it.
It's like NBA players that are really into playing 2K, where you ask them, what are you doing in your spare time? And they're like, I play 2K. It's funny.
Well, there's talk that he was in online racing events, tournaments, up until 1 or 2 in the morning at the same time that he had a race on that very next day. He's doing 2 full races in the space of a day. One of them's online and then has fuck all sleep and then comes out and races and wins that race and then goes back onto the computer at the end of the day after the race. Christ. Do another one.
Like, there's no doubt in how talented he is. Like, I'm not bagging his talent or anything. And he's probably the best driver in the best car. But I just wonder how much it would be worth to the owner of Formula One. And it's a company. It's not a single person. It's a company. But, if they offered him $200 million to drive for Sauber, how much would they make by the fact that the race winner from that point on, it would probably be a new driver every week. It would be really incredible.
Well, if they wanted to make it so that it was about getting more eyes on the sport, they'd have to put someone who's like great PR in his seat. You know, someone who's going to talk it up and be just everywhere and everyone loves them.
I mean, that would have been Ricardo a couple of years ago, but I think that his time's probably passing, if not past.
Possible. I think this is the thing. I reckon that the only car that he can actually perform in at the moment that's set up to his style of driving is that Red Bull car. Because I said when he did the testing last year at Silverstone that he was banging out times that were better than Perez was. At the same race on the same weekend.
Still, it's you know, that sell. It's like, you know what? This guy in a Red Bull would be really quick. Like, most of them could say that, to be fair.
That's right. But that's the thing. At the moment, there's a lot of holding patterns going on with contracts and stuff because they've got some regulations coming in 2026, which apparently on first inspections, it's going to make the cars a bit slower.
Yeah, I saw a thing where it said they'll be slower than the F2 cars, which I can't imagine they'll allow that to happen.
No, so there's still a lot of refinement to go there. So a lot of people don't know what's going to happen in that area. So, and there's a lot of drivers off contract this year.
Just before we finish our Formula One podcast, I was watching during the week a lot of race highlights from races, mostly in the 90s and the early noughties, and it felt like every single race I watched, at some point it was like, Coulthard's spun, Coulthard's crashed. And I started thinking about, like, you know how you and me, when it comes to Mark Webber, and like, we're basically of the opinion of, like, you, dude, you were in the fastest car by a long way with your teammate, for you had no excuses, right? He had no excuses. And then he whinged a little bit too much. He had a bit of that Canberra Raiders about him. Former Canberra Raider ball boy. That's where he picked it up. But
that's right. He's a Canberra Milk kid.
Yes. So you've got a driver like him, right? And then you've got, like, the classic number two drivers and stuff. Can you think of a number two driver that was at Williams at their best and then went to McLaren and was at McLaren at their best? And then he goes to Red Bull and he's at Red Bull at their best and did nothing.
Yeah.
That is shocking. Like, he makes Stirling Moss look like a world champion.
That is some peak number two driver areas right there. There's no doubt about it.
And people talk about Coulthard like, oh, he's a really good driver. It's like, you know what? Based on the cars he drove, nah, he wasn't.
He was just one of those guys who was consistently really good at picking which teams to move to and when.
And he couldn't do anything with it.
Nah, that's right.
But that, like, but those three cars are three of the greatest cars of all time in Formula One's history, and he did nothing.
Hey, he's a team man.
He's a poor man's Eddie Irvine.
This is true. And I was going to say, in more modern times, Lance Stroll is a poor man's Pastor Maldonado.
Well, he's starting to get to that point, isn't he?
I was watching some highlights of Lance Stroll. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say highlights. It was more of a video that was mocking him.
Mm-hmm.
And nearly every single time he goes into a corner where there's other cars around, he's going in far too fast and taking two title line and wiping out other cars. And I went, very Maldonado of him.
Yeah. I saw a couple of references of him and Maldonado during the week too. It's not someone you want to be referenced with.
No. And at this stage, Maldonado is better because at least he won a race.
Yep, that's true.
Just the one. And, wow, that bloke was nuts.
Maldonado, though, he nearly won as many races as David Coulthard.
Let that sink in.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I don't think we've got anything more to cover. I think we've nailed all the F1 news for the week.
Yeah, we've. I really like the audience that we've got with our F1 podcast that we now have.
Yeah, I don't know why they're all listening. They've all got this passion for rugby league. I didn't know there's a crossover market there, but we'll have to work on that.
Or felines.
We'll have to get them all in there.
Yeah.
Feline fans, rugby league fans, and Formula One. Who would have thought? What a weird combination.
I know.
Don't know how we manage that. Right, well, people, make sure you check us out on all the socials. Make sure you check us out on YouTube. I finally pulled my finger a little bit. We're starting doing a few shorts on there. So, you know, if you want to just send a few videos to try and tempt a few new listeners on board, you can just send them a few of those. Most of them are, like, freaky, either ranting or, you know, being open, having Jack DeBellin come to Penrith. Don't know what that was about.
Serious.
What was you doing there?
Seriously, the thing cuts off at, like, I go, so Jack the Bellin go to Penrith, and I'm like, yeah, I don't think so, and it stops at yeah.
Hey, your words, it says yeah. I heard that and I went, oh, just as I was listening to the thing, I was going, well, this is pretty useless, and then right then you just go yeah to Jack, and I went, done, we're putting that in.
That's what they call taken out of context.
Perfectly out of context. But yeah, that was there. But yeah, if you want to share those around, that'd be great. And make sure you check us out on the socials. Give us a follow on Twitter/X, whatever they call it, and Facebook, LinkedIn, everywhere. Like us, love us, all that sort of stuff. Give us some comments on the videos. Give us a review. I haven't had a review in a year and a half or something like that.
Yeah, someone post a review on Apple, a good one. And talk about cats. Say your favorite cat podcast.
Yeah, that'd be great. We'll have to try and put that into the podcast description somewhere. Yeah. Get a new audience.
Yep.
And that'd be great if you can do all that. And we'll catch us all next time.